SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the Humphrey Finney Pavilion, the sales grounds of Saratoga Racecourse, Fasig Tipton's Saratoga Yearling Sale. Night one in the books, the morning after, the dust settling, the ledger ink drying, and they'll do it all again tonight, second session, and everything that went on here last night. Kind of right out of the classic playbook, because the rain came pouring in at 5 o'clock with a vicious storm. No trees downed, no mayhem like there was a couple of years ago. That was amazing. But some damp grounds, horses were settled back down, and then the gavels started to knock, and the numbers just incredible. A market correction can't stop it. Nothing can stop John Stewart. He's resolute. And nothing can stop Rick Hammerly from traveling around the country.
Good morning, Steve. Well, you know, we missed each other in Iowa. You weren't coming to Del Mar, so I guess I had to make a run.
You never miss this, though.
I know. No. You know what? We've been coming up here this week for, 20 years at least, and ties in with a meeting sometimes, which it does this morning. But I come to this sale every year, and I don't pretend that I know what's, what's going on and the horses and all that. The activity, the ambiance, the people. It's fantastic, and it was last night. And as such, you mentioned the rainstorm. We were driving up from south of Albany yesterday, because yesterday was our trip day, and kept getting calls. Oh my gosh, what's raining? We never got a drop, and but we got here a few puddles, and everybody had a smile on their face because it was dry the rest of the night. So I don't know. It might rain in Saratoga every once in a while, but when it's like it is last night, it's fantastic. And I always say, these things are open to the public, and there's a few people that come in and kind of walk around. But if you came in for 15 minutes just to get kind of the feel of what goes on, and it's almost like you think it would be. They just like you see on TV. They bring the horses down in. They stand them up on stage and talk about them, and people raise their hand and they bid, right?
They bid, and they bid lustily. A lot of the names that you'd expect at the top of the tally board, and we'll talk later about Hammer's going to spend the first 25 minutes or so this morning, and then you got a meeting. But Jessica Martini and Christina Basanakis from TDN, they'll be here. We'll get their impressions and the stories. If you haven't read Jess and Christina in TDN, a lot of the top sellers and the stories behind them are covered. And certainly Zidane Racing, Hammer Zidane, at the top of the chart last night, the highly anticipated Not This Time fetched $3.4 million. There were six seven-figure sellers last night, and the first session last year, just two. In terms of yearlings, $500,000 and over, an outlandish. Just when you think, they can't sustain the momentum, and it's just so clear that the market for the most desirable physicals and pedigrees, there's just an insatiable market for it, Rick, and it's not stopping.
It's incredible. You mentioned the $1 million. There was 23 horses that sold for over $500,000.
Yeah, which
last
is
night, compared to 18 last year.
Exactly.
And the gross was up. The average was up. people want the best of the best. And I know in a weird way, I equate that with concert sales. The best seats, the most expensive seats, go first. People want they don't mind paying good money for the best. And in the horse world, this is the best right here at Saratoga, this sale. So but it's incredible. Everyone's got a smile on their face, and they're having a good time. They do a great job here at the pavilion, in the sales pavilion. I mean, everything's kind of close to each other. You got a barn right over here of horses, you know, with people will be lined up. You have the sales, kind of the pre-arena here where they'll walk around before they walk inside. And right next to that is a bar and a restaurant, and there's bars all around. And these horses are so well behaved during the whole process. It's just incredible how it takes place in this, like, this small area. It's fascinating.
Well, and Boyd Browning circulating. You want to? Yeah, well, you might as well. What better introduction than? Well, you're not going to follow. You're going to be parallel. Always a pleasure to welcome Boyd Browning.
Oh, thanks, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be on, and I think this might be the first live appearance that we've done sitting side by side with each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I ask, you got Boyd on or somebody? And I got to say, running to Boyd last time, he's just kind of in the crowd, just kind of hiding, watching, making sure everything's done right, and I was just explaining the process here with the confined space with bars over here, people here, and the horses doing their thing. It just goes off great every year. Fantastic.
We've had plenty of practice running the circus.
Yeah.
It's obviously a unique setting. We've got 6 acres here in Saratoga, 300 and some odd horse stalls, pavilion, and so forth. Kentucky, we've got 200 acres. I mean, it's just a completely different landscape. But it's, we're part of the community here. We're surrounded by neighbors and so forth. It's a community event. I mean, a lot of the crowd last night would have been local people. Yeah. But it helps create the atmosphere, the excitement, the energy. And, fortunately, we had a great cast of horses to sell last night. And I think we're going to have another great cast of horses to sell tonight.
We were just touching on some of the numbers and everything up. And RNA's down. The second half of the catalog on a par. Did you expect a bigger first night than second night?
You know, the reality is, and everyone says, what night's going to be better? How did you arrange the catalog? They're sold alphabetically by damn. I mean, in some years, like last year, there was a pretty significant deviation or fluctuation between night one and night two, and primarily because the two highest priced horses sold on night two last year. I'm not smart enough to sit here and tell you today, if we're going to have a $3.4 million horse tonight. I don't know.
In terms of the evaluation, are you selling? Do you have one of the good the babies?
I'm not selling here this year. It's hard to break into this quality.
That's not true.
What about next year, Bobby?
Next year, we're topping the sale.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Well, because Bobby, update us on where you stand. I mean, you the mares. I mean, in terms of you bought the expensive mare in Europe. Where do you stand right now in the game?
This is the funniest subject of my life.
I know.
Okay, because everybody thinks that I left and I was never coming back. I have 30 horses, so it's hard to say that you've done anything but continued to breed, etc. I just needed to take a little bit of break from racing, and that's it. I mean, listen, I've been around this for a long time. I was actually just telling my friend that I've been coming here for over 40 years. Saratoga is, a very special place to me. So,
well, I think Bobby's doing like most people are in this industry. The emphasis is on quality, not quantity.
Yeah.
And you really have to be very diligent, very, very disciplined, and try to identify, where you want to, the direction you want to go. And, indication to him and his experience and expertise in this industry. That it continues to realize approach and to be very
it's important. And also, it's also in when you're in the high end breeding in part of when you're in the high end.
on the new shows and some of the new things you're working on?
Yeah, so Triple Threat is Triple Threat is one of the new shows that I'm really proud of. Beat Bobby Flay continues. We're like in our 11th or 12th year. I've done over 600 episodes. Steve, I have to have you on. Can you come on Beat Bobby Flay? Because you know Jimmy Ventura was I don't know if you know this.
I not just a, just a couple of right.
It came
the other day.
It would air the
couple
other
weeks
day,
ago,
and we introduced him as boys like wait Jimmy Ventura was on Beat Bobby Flay, and we introduced him as. Entrepreneur and food enthusiast.
Although there's less of him every week, yes. Right?
And actually, shockingly, I won.
And I didn't know it was his dish.
He didn't know it was my dish.
Honestly,
true.
The blind tasting.
Totally blind tasting. Totally blind tasting.
I love it.
What was the dish? It was chicken piccata, right?
Yeah. The side pasta dish was not.
He didn't like my pasta, but you know.
And restaurant updates. I saw you had an opening.
Opened a new restaurant in Vegas at Caesar's Palace called Brasserie B. It's a French brasserie, obviously. It's right next to Amalfi, my Italian restaurant.
Which...
So I have two restaurants right next door to each other. And, you know, we continue to open the burger, Bobby's Burgers all over the place. And it's been fun.
Hammer and I at Paris for the NHC, we went. And I had my
food. Oh.
It's fabulous.
Oh,
it's
good.
Really, the onion rings. Off the hook.
Yeah, people love the onion rings. It's
unbelievable.
True. Yeah,
and you're gonna laugh at this, the potato chip, the crunch burger concept, because
yes.
We all did it as a kid in grade school.
Right,
and I've taken to doing it at home.
You crunchifying all your sandwiches and burgers.
Well, I'll tell you what, Zaps. You know the Zaps,
yeah, sure.
the voodoo
yeah.
flavor
yeah,
with
yeah,
the
yeah.
vinegary
yeah.
barbecue.
Uh huh.
I'm using the Zaps.
Okay.
On the crunch burger. Home run.
People are going to forget this is a horse racing show.
they forgot 15 years ago when I locked in. That was it. We took an exit ramp.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to give the microphone back to Hammer because he actually has intelligent things to say. But always nice to see you.
Bobby.
Pleasure.
Good luck. McGreevy on hand.
There,
he's who was it? Silent Tom, like Silent Tom. He's
yeah,
right. Like
yeah,
exactly. Like so. I know better than to ask about about the new sires and who you give that out very sparingly.
Look at that.
I know nothing.
The best. There's right. Nobody like McGreevy.
I
unbelievable.
Know, I know nothing.
So good. Which, I've had him on,
yeah.
And only because Aaron Yagoda
right.
had to, you know, we had to twist his arm and twist it to get him on because McGreevy is.
Oh, he's top notch. I've known Tom for 25 years. He had a long association with one of my good friends and his good friend, a great client, Rick Porter, and the
sure.
success they
sure.
achieved together was just remarkable. So, yeah, Tom's
time.
A great man.
No, Tom, one of the great eyes in the game for a young horse and proven out over the years. Speaking of the client base, obviously this John Stewart puts the spurs, it seems, to any kind of sale right now. It is a spree, Amr Zidane. Then there's regular long term stalwarts around the game, like the Lowe's and just looking up and down here, Coolmore with $1 million into mischief colt that Darby Dan offered up, Spendthrift and the Avenger team and Flying Dutchman.
Mm-hmm. That's a operation. Actually, it's bought some horses. They got some race horses right now. They bought the first few years under board shorts.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah,
they're racing under board shorts.
Right,
with Doug
right.
O'Neill.
I think they're using four trainers primarily.
Okay.
Hunter Rankin is helping assist them. Stan Huff's helping assist them.
Nice.
Obviously, Dutch Brothers Coffee. That's the Flying Dutchman moniker.
Okay, sure,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, they bought a farm in Kentucky.
Right.
Very, very, very serious and committed to the industry, putting together just a great program. I got a great team, and I think you'll be seeing and reading about them for many, many years to come, both on the racing side and on the breeding side of things.
Well, and you and I have talked about this, that there has to be fresh faces and new, new involvement. But then there's also the Charlotte Webbers of the world, right, and the Seth Klarmans that are really the bedrock of the game.
Well, it is, and I think our business is like any other business. I mean, look, some of the readings that you do, you plan on losing 20% of your customer base every year. Doesn't matter like what business that you're in. You're not losing them. Some people have an economic change. Some people have pass away. Some people lose interest and so forth. So you've always got to be, reinvigorating and restocking the game with new participants. And, I think that we've got a real basis and a platform to do that now. We've seen, obviously, improvements in purses in a lot of places. Exciting things happen here in New York with both the purses and the new Belmont Park. Churchill's made a dramatic commitment. New tracks being built in Maryland. I mean, there's a lot of capital being infused into the game, which gives people confidence.
Obviously, in the wake also, I mean, this is such an intense period at Saratoga, starting with the roundtable, Whitney weekend, then right into the sale. This weekend coming, the New York Breds will come through, and there'll be plenty of people who got turned away. And one of the interesting developments, Boyd, with this, honestly, a frenzy for the top elite hips, part of it has seen people trickle into the New York bred market because of how dear the top prices have been in the open catalog. And so some people have come into New York, the Reeves, for instance. The Reeves, people that stayed around that didn't necessarily get as many yearlings as they were hoping on these two nights. And next thing you know, Saturday and Sunday, they're buying New York breds.
I'm gonna argue with you a little bit or disagree with you just a little
bit.
There. I don't think it's a trickle into. I think that the New York program has gotten so good. The quality is so outstanding. Those horses can compete anywhere. And they can compete in open company in New York. They can compete anywhere in the United States. And frankly, they can compete anywhere in the world. And I think what you've seen is a dramatic uptick in the quality of horses being offered for that sale. And some really smart people, like the Reeves, say this is a great business opportunity to be racing with these purses on a consistent basis year-round in New York. So I think and there's certainly some spillover. I mean, clearly we've associated the two sales, in the same basic week with each other. But I think it's a really indication of the strength and the growth of the New York breeding program and embracing program for the New York breds that's led to that.
Well, and, of course, with NYRA, the full crop of this year, by the time they reach the racetrack, the purses will be at parity with the open company.
Right, exactly. And that's why it makes such good sense for people to own New York breds.
I'm glad you mentioned that, but because it's so important for states other than Kentucky to get their breeding program rolling, and New York has done it in what, 4 or 5 years? Obviously, the purses need to go along with it, and there's Gatewood, speaking of Keeneland. But you mentioned that, and I totally agree with what you said. I was going to say something similar. They're coming here just sometime. I mean, they're coming here to buy their New York breeds because of the money and how much better the horses have run. They compete anywhere.
No question. And, I think the one thing that, New York has recognized is the intrinsic value of the thoroughbred industry in terms of green space, in terms of economic creation on the farms and at the racetrack, and the trickle-down effect. I mean, it's not just the farm where you're paying board. You're supporting veterinarians. You're supporting blacksmiths. You're supporting fencing companies. The whole economic benefit is tremendous. And, here we are up in, my friends in Kentucky say, oh, God, you got to go to New York. It must be awful being up there in that concrete playground. I'm like, you've never been to Saratoga. You've never been to upstate New York. It's beautiful. I mean, it really is. And I think it's a quality of life that really is probably underestimated in terms of the impact of our industry really around the world.
Well, and you talk about the various, economies, Billy Terrell right here, and the transport side. I mean, one thing that I've learned over the last 25 years is I'm driving around, the number of horse transport in every direction, wherever you go. The big silver vans, and it is amazing, and I never really had noticed. Like, sometimes you'd be driving and you say, oh, look, those horses. Now that you know all the transport companies, you see them everywhere. And I'm on the road. You know, Rick, you're on the road a tremendous amount.
Billy, you see Billy everywhere, too.
I see Billy everywhere. I see
there
Billy.
There must be three Billys.
Exactly. My man John Parada, they mm-hmm. lived in the same building on the beach in Hollywood, mm-hmm. Badania. And so every time we'd come spend time with Parada before they moved to Ireland, he and Maggie, there's Billy by the pool.
That's right.
So great. I started to bring in, there's Big Joe. I started to bring up the round table. And I ask you, you know, industry overarching questions occasionally, Boyd, because, you know, you're working in this arena, but the external forces and the direction overall, the HISA thing continues to, be tabled for now in terms of some of the legalities. Your thoughts about what we're hearing and what we're seeing, you know, in terms of the overall industry direction?
Well, I'm optimistic. I think that we've seen some dramatic progress on the equine safety front. It's not easy. There's no simple solutions. It's not going to happen overnight. There's growing pains. We're going to get some things right. But I think what we've got is an industry-wide commitment to improving racetrack surfaces, sales integrity, wearable technology, better communication of our message, and so forth. I think that we also recognize that we have to continue to be very, very, very aware of some of the external forces that are working against us. We have to be united as we can as an industry, to know that it's not going to be perfect. We're not going to be, it's no overnight instant success in terms of any of the initiatives that we're working on. But collectively, we've got to continue to try to do the right thing by the horse and the right thing for the industry. And if we continue to do that, we'll make progress and we'll make this game even better than it's been in the past.
You know, you mentioned one element that I was toying with bringing up with you. And that was the sales integrity aspect. And I think back to Jess Jackson's mm-hmm. initiative. And you know, people want to make out like the industry never reacts to problems or to crises. And it's so unfair because, in fact, no one rarely goes back and visits all the successes, and certainly aftercare, you know, that there was a crisis there that's been largely addressed. There's always still work to do. The sales integrity task force that Jess Jackson championed, a lot of the complaints that were part of that period have completely disappeared, and the things that were addressed by consigners and that you and OBS and Keeneland all, pledged to, to commit to, it absolutely has been a success. And it's nice, be nice to acknowledge that here and there.
Well, I think we all feel an obligation and a commitment. Once again, it's ongoing. I mean, we've continued to modify our conditions of sale. We continue to look at things as things evolve. And clearly, the beginning of this year, we've announced some updated revisions to our medication policies to make those policies more stringent, more in line, frankly, with some of the HISA guidelines, and to try to do a better job of that. You know, Phasic, Tipton, and Keeneland, and OBS, we have regular communication. We work together on it as industry partners to try to make sure we're doing everything we can to create a fair environment for people to do business in, and to make sure we created a fair environment for that horse to be presented fairly. And it's an ongoing, you never get done. You have to continue to be diligent. You have to continue to work together because there's going to be some new things emerge. We don't know what, 5 years from now is going to happen, but we're cognizant of the fact. And ultimately, as an auction company, our integrity is all we've got. I mean, people, you know, we have to treat both buyer and seller fair, and they both feel like have to get a fair shake and when they walk into that auction ring, whether you're buying or whether you're selling.
One of the things, too, that we monitor closely, and I am always eager to point out, the international scene or the international interest, there had been something, for me anyway, my impression, there had been this phony mantra that, oh, the rest of the world doesn't want our bloodstock. Then you get to November, and broodmare after broodmare, it goes to Japan. It is notable that, you know, a lot of American-based operations have been actively buying abroad, Australia and Europe. And then there is the crossover of international operations coming here and buying aggressively. Give us a feel, Boyd, how you feel that, that interplay has changed or, continues to morph.
Well, I think it's the world continues to shrink in many regards. You see crossover of operations, as you noted, from, Australian operations doing business in the United States, vice versa. Obviously, for many, many years, there's been a strong relationship between some of the European operations and the American operations. A lot of it, frankly, has to do, at the yearling side of things with the stallions. We went through a period of time where 25 years ago, you had some stallions that were, frankly, dominant in terms of, that stood in the United States, that were dominant even in Europe, like Stormcat, Nureyev, King Mambo, and so forth. We went through a period of time where there really was, probably 5 years ago, there weren't too many American stallions that were in flavor, quote-unquote, in Europe. And now you're seeing, Justify. Justify is a worldwide horse. He's got success literally everywhere. They run on dirt. They run on turf. They run short. They run long. They run at two. They run at three. They run at four. So I think, a lot of it is just having horses like that appeal. I think you're seeing Not This Time emerge. We'll continue to emerge as a stallion that's going to be very popular around the world. So it's a lot of it has to do with the quality of the bloodstock. I think that you look at the success that the Yoshida family has achieved in Japan, and a lot of it's been based on American. You can trace them back to American pedigrees. Now they've been involved for 50 years. It doesn't happen overnight, but the foundation of a lot of their successful horses has been American pedigrees. And I think that'll continue to be the case. I think you'll see Americans now. You're seeing, Mike Rapoli was shopping in Japan, trying to bring some Japanese flavors, some pedigrees back to the United States and so forth. So I think that it's a worldwide marketplace that we live in, and I think that's a great thing. And we should be proud of our American horses, but always striving to improve and be higher, more competitive, and an international place.
Well, from that standpoint, certainly the crossover is. Has grown, and it's always evident. We're going to have we'll have a visit from Jessica Martini and Christina Basanakis to talk about what they saw last night and what they anticipate tonight. Boyd, as you're talking, one topic that I can't remember ever asking you about is your own path into this, and how you ended up in the sale business to begin with, and then at Phasing.
I was born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky. Had no family involvement in the thoroughbred industry.
None.
Used to love to go to Keeneland with my grandfather. We'd take two lawn chairs out there when I was on spring break, and I'd get $2 a race to bet most of the time, but really no involvement. I was a CPA in a former life. Started with the accounting firm where it was then Ernst & Winnie, now Ernst & Young. And my area of specialty was coal, COAL. I worked for a couple of coal companies on the accounting side of things when I was in college. I was a quote-unquote coal expert at Ernst & Winnie when I started. And that meant that I spent a lot of time in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia and so forth.
Sure.
I had one client based in Lexington that was a March 31 year end, and it was Phasing Tipton. And in 1988, Fasig decided to relocate their corporate headquarters from New York to Lexington. I'd been in public accounting 6 years. We had one child, we had one daughter. We were expecting another child. And I'd had enough of spending 40 to 50% of my time on the road, and particularly in some of the places I was traveling. So I was hired at Fasig Tipton in 1988 as the assistant controller. And if anybody's asking, I was like 12 because I've been there now 36 years. just kind of evolved. But, you know, I fell in love with the business. I fell in love with the game. I love action. I'm an action personality. I mean, I can't sit still. I don't mind. It's the worst punishment you can give me is like make me sit around and do anything. So my personality is kind of apt for the sales business. And as I said, I get to go to work in the morning, and that's truly a blessing that many, many people don't have. My friends at home, we live in a neighborhood. We don't live on a farm, and we're surrounded by good people that, they've been friends. We've been 25 years. And they all laugh. They say, you don't have a job, boy. You've got a lifestyle.
Yeah.
But they all damn sure when we're out, when we're grilling steaks on the grill, and there's a steak at Del Mar there, I got to call time out. We got to watch a race at 9 o'clock Pacific or 9 o'clock Eastern time and 6 o'clock Pacific time. They're like, who are we rooting for? And I'm like, well, if the one could come to a sale potential, we sold the two and so on and so forth. And they're like, they're envious because they've got jobs that they not that they're, very successful people, generally speaking, and good people, but they have a job, and I don't have a job. I get to go to work.
And that, that when you say lifestyle, it's one of the things about this as an industry that is just it's just unique, and it seems that one of our biggest challenges as an industry is to communicate that to the outside world that doesn't necessarily understand, when the industry gets attacked. I don't think that there's any understanding that these are people that are immersed in this, and everybody is invested, literally. I mean, it is their livelihood and life's work, and in a lot of cases their whole family heritage is in this, and I think that I think we would do well to drive that point home more often.
There's no question about that. I mean, and I think that there's very few people involved in an industry that are quote-unquote doing it only for the money. The work's too hard.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter if you're at the racetrack or at the sales arena or wherever it happens to be, or on a farm. I mean, a horse is 365.
Yeah, it doesn't.
24 hours a day.
No,
and
doesn't let up.
And these horses, I laugh and tell people sometimes, what they're trying to do is 24 hours a day trying to drive us crazy, trying to do everything they can to make us want to jump off of a building because of their, the things that they get into. But I mean, we love it. We love the horse, and we love being around them. And it's the commonality that I think is unique to our business is that, you see, it's the only game that I'm aware of, the only business that I'm aware of that you can see billionaires interacting on a one-on-one, legitimate interaction with a person that's, hands-on at the barn, and they've got a commonality, they've got a shared love for that horse.
Exactly.
And that's pretty cool.
Exactly. I've said that. That's from a horse player standpoint, I've made that point that I learned that probably when I started coming here on a regular basis in the 90s, living in Montreal and coming down for weekends, where you could be in the back of Ciro's outside and at the bar, there's billionaires types that tapped out and got clobbered, and there's somebody in shorts and a t-shirt and a ball cap, they're buying drinks for everybody,
right?
This is one of the great equalizing environments that exists. It's remarkable in that way.
Well, it is, and it really it's overreaching. It also applies when you put those horses in that starting gate.
There you go.
The $10,000 horse exactly. running against the $1 million horse,
know.
And neither one of them know what each other cost, and they don't care. So, you know, sometimes you have the storybook endings, and sometimes you have, you know, from a sales perspective, you want both. When you love to see a horse like Sierra Leone, who was a sales topper 2 years ago, go on and achieve and be successful like that. But you also love seeing, I mean, like, you know, like right now in our world, you know, Sierra Leone was $2.3 million sales topper in 2021. Clearly the best three-year-old filly in the country is Torpedo Anna. And she was a $40,000 Phasing Tipped in October sale graduate. So you never know.
No.
You never know.
No.
Yeah. And that's what inspires, it's what makes a game the greatest.
Well, and it, you know, it's one of the things, too, that is actually it's imperative
right.
that those kinds of horses, that homebreds, backyard breds, regional program breds, and modest purchases. Larry Demarest and
yeah.
another, you know, another storyline in that arena. It keeps... It, you know, keeping hope alive, you know, that you could come in with a modest budget and be successful and achieve things at the highest level. I mean, you go back to the Belmont Festival, and we'll see it again Travers Day, but this Atlantic, oh my gosh, Atlantic Six, the guys that own Book 'em Dano.
Right, right.
I mean, they were so stunned to be on that stage and in that spotlight for what their expectations were getting involved. And, you know, that's what keeps us all going. I mean, I've got a little nothing, you know, we've got a little homebreds, and you know very well.
Right.
I've talked to you about the struggles that we've had, you know, either campaigning, you know, getting them to the races or trying to sell. And it is so difficult. And so everybody that is involved at any level commands, you know, our appreciation and respect. And frankly, given how easy it is to have animosities, it's very notable that there's more camaraderie than there is animosity.
Right.
Because everybody knows how tough it is.
Shared horse struggle. Play,
exactly. As a breeder, as an owner, as a trainer, as a bettor. Everybody is appreciative of the moments they get in the sun.
No question about it. No question about it. And the reason we all keep doing it is when you get it right,
exactly.
It is so good.
Exactly.
It is
right.
So good. It's
nothing
a feeling
like
you can't describe.
No.
Yeah.
Cash a ticket.
Right. Cash a ticket, sell a big horse, win a big race. Yeah.
Exactly right. I got to ask you about a coal. I got to give you my coal tie-in. I got to Cincinnati right. in 1982 with Cannon Mills, and I was selling the towel.
Right.
There were two lines. There was department store line. There was the mass merchant line, and I handled the mass merchants, and I had to go to a company store, coal company, Island Creek Coal Company.
Sure.
And would go down
based on Harrodsburg Road in Lexington, Kentucky.
But it would have to go to the stores. It would have to go out.
Oh, to the mine, yeah.
London and Manchester and Bluefield all tromped all that area.
We stayed in some of the same hotels.
The funniest part of those drives was you'd look on it, you know, on a map. And I grew up in Connecticut, New York. And you look at it on a map. Well, it's 27 miles. Yeah, it's 27 miles as the crow flies.
Right.
You start to get on those roads, and it would take you 3 hours to go 20 miles.
You're behind a coal truck.
Oh my God!
And you're not going to pass it.
As eye-opening and as fascinating an experience, and then later when I went to work for Procter & Gamble in Kansas City and Trump, but the companies, these were the old-fashioned company stores,
right, yeah, yeah.
Are they still around, Island Creek?
Island Creek is no longer involved. I mean, you know, we've seen a dramatic transformation in the coal
sure.
industry in Kentucky and really throughout most of the United States. We literally go California yearlings in late September, Timonium early October, New York 2 weeks later up here for the New York mixed sale, Kentucky October for 1,600 yearlings, and then that little sale in November. And as if we didn't have enough to do, we've kind of, so that, you know, we've talked before, we've got these digital sales that will
become a
big part of what
very
we do.
Big.
Big part of what we do, big part of serving the industry. We've got a digital sale starting here in late October, late August. We'll probably have a couple hundred horses in that. And so it's always something, which is really good for an action junkie. But it's really go time now. Once we get to Saratoga, between Saratoga and frankly the November sale, it's go time.
Just, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Should mention too, tonight, the Complexity share that sells before the session starts. And these are rare opportunities, and they seem to be, you know.
Oh, it's great. You know, we've had a relationship with Airdrie. Governor Jones was a great supporter of
our
sales in Kentucky, and Brett's obviously assumed the reins there and does a great job and a great friend. And, you know, we could see Complexity heating up. We actually sold a not this timeshare last year before the second night. We had a conversation with Brett. Hey, what about doing a Complexity share? It's great for your stay, and it's great to promote the horse. It's a great opportunity to get a little bit of money off the table. It's great for your syndicate to see a share go through there in a public environment like that. So we'll offer that tonight at the beginning of the sale. He was off to a flying start, to a roaring start, Complexity was, as a stallion, and we've been fortunate that the good luck and the good fortunes continued with some additional and impressive runners since the share was announced. So should be fun. Good way to kick off the evening.
Well, and when it comes to the digital sale, the one thing that's particularly notable is, you know, there's this appetite for ready-made horses, and
Jesse's walking by, and he's getting nervous with him, me holding a microphone.
the marketplace for the ready-made horses, and that that's what's made this, you know, the digital platform so successful, plus the ability for people that may get a mare that they expected, to campaign through the year and then maybe sell in November, and maybe something knocks them out off the, out of training, and, you know, rather than wait, you can pop them in a sale. I mean, there's so many, you know, things. Obviously, conditions change for people in so many different ways. So it's been a, you know, it's been a real godsend, frankly. I mean, for a lot of people.
Well, it creates flexibility. It creates liquidity. I refer to it as currency, which you kind of mentioned. If you get a significant update, or if you have a significant runner, or you have a horse breaks his or her maiden, jumps up there and, you know, has appeal, you're getting five calls in a private marketplace, which is pretty inefficient. I mean, it's hard to tell what a horse is worth. It's not like you can go, like, to, you know, real estate. You can say, okay, well, there's five houses that were similar and they brought like X. There's not five similar. What a horse is worth is, you know, what a willing buyer is willing to pay. And, you know, you present them in a competitive environment and give everybody an opportunity to bid, and most of the time that results in a successful outcome.
Well, and you know, I hadn't thought of that, but you bring that up, and the fact that there's these new checkpoints over the course of the calendar is significant, because it can probably help people make determinations as they're going along what, you know, where the market is. And it's almost like a pulse on weanlings, broodmares, broodmare prospects, ready-made horses that have a certain degree of resume success already. That's a very good way to know where you stand with your own portfolio.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think there's certain types of horses that are obviously more initially suited to the digital marketplace. As you mentioned, race horses, as you mentioned, mares. You know, I think that probably weanlings and yearlings will be a little bit not quite as advanced in that regard. You can watch a video, you can see photos, you can still get all the repository information. There's probably still a little bit of a reluctance on some people to really tee off unless they have a chance to see the horse. So they can go to the farms and inspect them, or they can go to the location or the racetrack, wherever, and physically inspect them, but they're not gathered in one spot. But, you know, a lot of information can be readily gained very quickly, and, you know, hopefully our platform makes it very easy for for a potential bidder or for a potential buyer to observe that horse, get a lot of information. They can contact the consigner, but it's been very successful so far, and I think we'll continue to see growth in that marketplace. But it's really a complementary to our live sales. We're not trying to necessarily compete with each other, but there's a horse may win tomorrow at Saratoga, and we say, hey, what about putting that horse in a digital platform coming up right around the corner? I mean, we just did a flash sale last week with two horses. One sold for $500,000, and we sold a 33% interest in a horse. First time we've done that, and it brought $330,000. Yep. So every day's a new day.
Emmanuel and Ice Cream, You Scream.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about people that have really utilized it. The Greens, DJ
right.
Stable have really adopted
right.
this, where they will not, I don't want to say liquidate by any means, but they will trim their inventory as they think necessary.
I imagine Lynn and John Green being really smart and being really intelligent. I mean, but
another accounting backgrounds.
Yeah, they've been a lot more successful in accounting than I ever would have been. But I mean, and Lynn Green. I mean, he's inspirational to me on a lot of levels. But he loves the game. He's very, very, very engaged. But he's always thinking. I mean, he emails me or calls me and says,
yeah,
what about this and what about that? I'm like, damn, I wish I had. My mind was half as active or half as good as his. But, clearly recognized there was an opportunity. We're willing to take a chance with it and have achieved some, very successful results with it. And the people who have bought their horses have achieved some significant
exactly.
success. Pounce.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not Pounce, because Pounce, I've gone brain dead for a second. The complexity cult that just won at Woodbine. Was sold by the Greens after he broke his maiden. So, yeah.
Well, that leads me. I'll let you go. But I was going to ask, what is over the years, if you think back, what has surprised you about the industry or the marketplace? Something that you wouldn't have expected at a certain time. As things evolved.
I think the one thing that is. The resiliency
nice.
Of the men and
yeah.
women who participate in our game.
Nice.
Just the resiliency, the shared love, the shared desire to have a good horse, to be around a good horse, the care.
Yeah. And what's been your greatest satisfaction to date in the game?
I don't know.
I hope...
Simple person. I mean, yeah. They asked me last night, what's our plan for today going to be? We're going to try to do the same thing today that we did yesterday. What are we going to try to do tomorrow? We're going to get up tomorrow morning, go to work, and try to get a few of them RNA sold, and we're going to try to work on the next digital sale, work on the California sale. I mean, it's when you get to go to work, it's not you don't rest. There's no laurels. Hellfire. I mean, you look around here. You look around here today, and you'll see that was fun and that was easy. And you think of all the people. How many people are involved in a successful sale? It's not just at work for Phase Tipton. It's every consigner. It's every the men and women at the farm. It's the people around. I mean, it's thousands of people have had an input or had some. Made a contribution to the success of a successful sale overall. So it's, as I said, I'm not very smart, not very sophisticated. Just we're going to keep working. We're going to keep trying to do a good job and have a few laughs along the way and a few smiles and, sell a few more good horses.
There you go. Well, they're here and available. They'll be here next week or this weekend for the New York sale, and then on down the road. Boyd Browning, always a pleasure, and particularly first time I've come and done this. Thanks to this new unit that I've got. That's I don't have to. I'm unencumbered by electricity or I can use Wi-Fi and the battery powered unit that makes me mobile.
Glad to see you on the sales ground, Steve.
I enjoy it. what you don't want to see me is signing a ticket. That's the one thing you don't want and I don't want.
No, and today was the beauty of Saratoga. I'm literally walking through the sales grounds on my way from the snack bar after enjoying a delicious bacon and cheese sandwich. You grab me. 2 minutes later, Bobby Flay's walking by.
It's great. It's fabulous.
We're gonna wing it. We're gonna have a little fun. And
that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. But once again, we all got a common interest. That four-legged creature called the horse.
Yeah, and it sustains a lot of people, and we're all thankful, and that's why we're all committed to it. Boyd right, Browning, Steve, everybody. Fasig Tipton, thank you so much.
All right, always a pleasure.
Outstanding. Boyd Browning, folks, who, you know, a lot of times we do quick hits with Boyd, before sales and during sales, but unique opportunity, and you didn't know that that he came from the coal country and from the coal industry and accounting industry. That's the beauty of long form radio, I guess, right? What we do. Coming up toward the top of the hour, I'm looking for Jess and Christina. And here she is. Where's Christina? No Christina. Lazy Christina. When I see her, you know what that is. You can say to her, that's the Quebecois in her coming out. She's on Quebec time.
Isn't that the same time as it's Eastern?
It is Eastern, but I mean, you know, in terms of the living in Montreal,
it's a different lifestyle.
It is a different
more
lifestyle.
European.
Exactly.
Okay.
And like, for instance, you get used to things like on Fridays, everybody goes to, especially when the weather gets good, everybody goes to lunch and lunch on the terrace.
Okay.
And so lunch comes and then everybody's smoking cigarettes and all of a sudden it's 3:30. Nobody's going back to work. You in Montreal, if you don't get on a Friday, if you don't get what you need done by noon, 11:30, you're finished. You wait till Monday, because especially that's
why
basically
are we all here. We should all go to Montreal.
Well, exactly. I'm
not gonna lie. She was a little cranky this morning.
Was she really?
She's just a little.
What's her problem? What?
She's battling a migraine, so we won't give her this one. Yeah, she's just a little under the weather. Yeah.
I hate to hear that.
Yeah.
All right. Now I take back everything. Don't tell her that I was kidding her.
We won't tell anyone.
Don't worry. She'll hear this. She's already gotten the text.
I have to live with her for the next few days, Steve. You at least get to leave.
Jessica Martini is joining us, and it's always time for a martini.
Yeah.
When it's Jessica
Especially
Martini.
Especially when you're in Montreal, apparently.
Well, absolutely. that is for sure. You were sitting back and waiting for Boyd to clear.
I don't know why you even need me. You got Boyd. He's got to give you everything, right?
We gave him, Boyd did the overview.
Okay.
I need you here for.
On the nitty gritty?
Yes. We're gonna
I have to remember what happened last night. Is that what you're telling me?
You do.
It's all a bit of a blur. So much happens in such a short period of time.
Well, and let's introduce this, because I asked Boyd, and the way the morning unfolded and the weekend, there had to be some concern about some, you know, market volatility.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because financial market conditions have a big influence typically on the horse sale market. And so you wondered if there was going to be any concern. Then, of course, came the weather issues. And you wondered if, you know, we were going to have any trees falling like we did a few years ago. But clearly nothing was going to stop this gravy train.
Right. And I Boyd probably told you, like, this top level of the market, they're not as affected by fluctuations in the marketplace. So, you know, they've got some cushion to deal with.
I guess.
They've got more disposable income than your average bear.
Well, and dispose of it they did last night. I mean, this ends up being one of the top first nights ever here.
Yeah, yeah. It was, last 2 years have set records, and these were all ahead of those metrics from, you know, the cumulative metrics from last year and the year before. So, I think it would be the first time the average would be over 500,000 for the sale.
Unbelievable.
I mean, that was, I think it was 502 last night. So if that pace maintains, it would be a big record for the sale.
What's your anticipation just in terms of the second half of the catalog and you know, the kinds of hips that, you know, might jump off the
kind of just looking
gavel.
At the pages, I thought like yesterday we might have been a little stronger, but there's still some seriously nice pedigrees tonight, you know. We talked about, I'm sure you talked about the Charlatan from yesterday.
We did was just mention, you know, that some of the top hips, but I was waiting for you to kind of get into the weeds on, on the catalog with the 6-7-figure sellers. And you mentioned the Charlatan. I saw Donato Lanny earlier, and I expect we'll see John Sakura as well. But this is a big hit for Charlatan.
Yeah, you remember a couple years ago, everyone was going crazy for the mares in foal to Charlatan. So now we're seeing the results of that with these yearlings. I think he had a bunch of nice sellers last night. And he has a, I think it's a filly. Yeah, a filly. It's a half to travel column tonight with Denali. Charlatan had 5 yearlings last night, sell for a little over $3 million, average of $615,000.
And to give, you know, one of the things that we like to do on that front when we look at these, Centennial bought one for $375. Tom McCrocklin for $150. Pin Oak for $550. Then there's the John Stewart Resolute, the $1.5 million seller. And Mike Ryan picked one off for $500,000.
So a lot of astute people there. You see Tom McCrocklin obviously has had a lot of success buying high-level pinhooking prospects. So, yeah, if he's on your horse, I think that's probably a good sign.
Well, exactly. We love doing that. And Centennial, obviously, will see this one through. And I was going to say, was it Colts or Phillies? It was basically split, 3 Colts, 2 Phillies.
Yeah. So, yeah. And as I said, there's the big Philly tonight with Denali.
Should we talk about Stallion or should we talk? Should we shift gears to since we mentioned individual sellers? Let's stick at price tags.
Okay.
And talk about the Not This Time that led the led last night's action, $3.4 million, and seems like this colt even oversold expectation.
It did seem. I talked to Kim Nardelli, the consigner. She was consigning for the Kasners, and she was just basking. She just looked. She was aglow. It was the highest price she'd ever sold a horse for. The Kasners are apparently vacationing in Africa, so she was on the phone with them and said they were over the moon with that result. It's obviously a big family for them, going back with, you know, they bought the mare, the second dam for this colt privately in 2005, I think, and she produced Colonel John for them. So obviously they have a long association with that family.
And this is a sister.
The dam is a full sister to Colonel John.
Yes.
And it was interesting to watch Amr Zaidan and Donato and Bob Baffert were up at the top of the stairs bidding, and down in the pavilion in the first rows of seats were we saw Vinny Viola and Terry Finley, and Vinny Viola was bidding, and so it was up and upstairs, downstairs, back and forth, and Amr Zaidan finally got him.
$3.4 million. Zaidan is a guy that if he's got his mind set on something, he rarely will be deterred.
Right, he bought that $4 million Curlin last year, the one out of Beholder. So yeah, he comes to play.
Well, and you mentioned Curlin, the top filly last night, $1.9 million, Jacob West, for Bob and Luana Lowe.
Yeah, and that's interesting because it was a Don Alberto bred, and they had a big night last night. They had $2 million horses. They had the, let me remember it rightly now, they had the Tappet that went to Flying Dutchman for $1.5 million, and they had another $1 million horse, I remember, vaguely. So, yeah, they had a big night. I think they had 3 sell really well last night.
This
The Carlin, the Carlin Adamatea, the filly, 1.9 yeah. million. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we started with that one.
Exactly.
I'm with you.
And one area that I should shore up, it happens to be the consigner side of things. I don't, you know, because they're always so busy, and it's very tough to get them. And I understand. I mean, to tear them away, you know, I've had some conversations after sales. Mm-hmm. Easier to, you know, to get them.
It's definitely tough at a boutique sale like this because it's just everything happens within a few hours. And so it's hard to track everybody down. And sometimes you miss those big stories. But then you look back later and you're like, oh, yeah, Tom Alberto, they did a great job last night.
Well, and you know, Keeneland, you know, obviously nonstop for two solid weeks.
Yeah, you have plenty of time to. to think at Keeneland.
Meg Levy with the Gunrunner Colt out of Lady Godiva, the $1.7 million. That was the first of the John Stewart purchases.
Yeah, he's if you follow him on Twitter, you knew he was going to be a big presence here. Yeah. He's a determined bidder. Sometimes it looks like his team wants him to stop, but he's not going to stop. Nobody's stopping that man.
What else did we know about this colt?
I know nothing about this call. Christina was our person, and, you know, she's not here, but she was on our, she was our John Stewart watcher, so she did all of that last night.
She was on Stewart watch?
Maybe that's why she's really tired today.
Is that what we're going to call it, Stewart, the Stewart
she
watch?
She pretty much just stood behind his, where he was sitting, and she just waited.
This is
she went to talk to him a couple times. I'm going to buy the next one. So she's like, okay, we're going to wait.
This happens to be a half to Leofric.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I knew that. I didn't know that.
Leofric, of course, by Candy Ride. And this is the most recent. I guess this mare did not have, I'm just looking, this mare did not have a 24. This is her most recent foal. There's a unraced two-year-old. Doesn't even have a name yet, an Into Mischief. I'll tell you one thing that's interesting about this mare. Mm-hmm. Lady Godiva by Unbridled Song. Four of her seven foals are gray, and then she had three dark bays.
What does that tell us?
Well, it certainly, it's interesting. Box of Chocolates, who was not a bad horse, four-time winner and 48 starts, made 200,000 plus. Happened to be a dark bay, and Leofric, who made just under a million, he's a gray out of this mare. This is notable. Her 18, her 19, and you know I mentioned her 22, her 2-year-old is unnamed. Her 18 and 19 have not made the races.
Well, and now what are we looking at colors now? Or are we? Do we
well,
think,
no,
is
I'm just
there
noticing.
Pattern of
no, there
no,
really
no
isn't.
Okay, okay.
There really is not from that standpoint.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I mean, like here, this is a gun runner, but happened to be a gray, and you just would think that you know, that's where the influence. I'll discuss this. I'll discuss this tomorrow with Sid.
Okay.
Well, let Sid riff
on
this.
On that one. I was getting a little worried.
No, I'm just it's just notable. But yeah, this would bother me. I can tell you if you're spending, you know, you're spending $1.7 million.
Yeah.
And you know, two of the last three.
It was interesting. I talked to Bob Feld about Trickery, who won the Belmont Derby, and he was saying the mare was a well-bred mare and had a graded stakes winner, I think, but she hadn't produced anything. And he said he wasn't worried about that because he thought that this foal that he was buying didn't look like the mare's other foals. So I guess it depends on, you know, who they look like. And,
Sid, that'll be Sid's topic tomorrow.
Okay,
guaranteed. The next number, the Tappet, and I asked about Flying Dutchman,
That's Travis Boersma. He started buying his board shorts several years ago, but now they've bought a farm in Lexington. They're going to be a breed to race operation, so they're mostly going to be looking at fillies. I think they bought a big-priced Nyquist last night as well. But they thought maybe they just buy a couple really nice colts to round out and have something to race next year.
Well, the Dutch Brothers Coffee.
Exactly. Yes.
Is what Boyd mentioned, and you know that's interesting, right? Because we had the other coffee people.
Yes, we did.
You know who I mean?
From, I do.
I want to say from Arkansas.
We're on Montreal time.
Well, this is not
one for the time vaults, is it, Steve?
No, I can see them. West Rock.
Oh, right, sure. Yeah,
West
okay.
Rock,
okay.
Right? Uh-huh. That's another coffee entity that,
okay.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, the Dutch Brothers has gotten very big, very fast, right? They've got retail.
They're huge, yeah.
They've got the drive-through.
I don't know that it's come to New Jersey yet, but it.
No, I think they're still.
West Coast, right? Oregon. I know he's based in Oregon, so yeah. The first time that I had heard of him was when he bought that Flightline share that was at Keeneland a few years ago.
That's right. That's right. On the night of stars.
That was the first time I'd ever heard of him. No, was it Keeneland?
Keeneland.
Yeah. And then he bought a few nice priced fillies over the years, over the last couple of years.
This is a Tappet colt out of Mopatism, who I want to say was Doug O'Neill.
Yes, sure.
Right.
And then Don Alberto bought in 2019 after she retired.
Well, and.
And they had a nice result here last year, I think, with a curling colt that Eclipse Thoroughbreds bought.
Well, and I'm just pulling up. She won the La Cañada, grade two winner. She multiple grade two placed and grade one placed, actually, too. Santa Margarita and the Phipps. She was a nice.
Hard knocking mare.
Yeah, she was nice. Made $875,000. Three-time winner, Mopatism, and this is her first. Her second.
Second foal.
Second foal, right?
Yeah, the last one sold for eight something last year.
That and has been named. I can tell you that has a name. The two-year-old Journalism.
Well, yeah.
Journalism.
I don't know if that's the winning angle, but okay.
There you go. And as you mentioned, sold here at HIP 110, $825,000.
Yeah, so.
There we go. Craig Burnick wandering by. No, get you later. You come over? Come over and check? All right. Band guy. There you go. Billy Terrell. We are live. We are.
What's the podcast?
Huh? It's the radio show on Sirius XM, Monday through Friday. 9 to noon.
Yeah.
XM 207.
Okay.
There you go. Unbelievable. How you? You got a couple minutes? You want to sit down? All right. Sit down. We're great. You know Jess Martini, of course.
Hey, good.
Craig Burnick joins the Coffee Clatch.
What's going on?
You know, they're selling yearlings last night and tonight, and the fur flew.
It was wild.
Right?
It was absolutely wild. And I was walking around, and I said, I don't think I'm going to get any of these horses bought. This is. My grandpa always said the cases of shampoo can't stack with the barrels of oil. And I was seeing a lot of things like that last night. So, you know, there's money, and then there's money, and sometimes you just have to say good luck with that horse.
Well, a case of VO5 is about the same price as a barrel of oil.
No, I don't think so. I don't think.
What kind of shampoo are you buying?
I don't think so.
You know VO5?
Yeah, I do.
too funny. Of course, Glenn Hill, and impressions, Craig? What struck you, and you know where we think we are right now?
You know what? They've done a great job, Phasing Tipton, bringing bringing buyers up here. I think it's they're much less likely to find homes and multiple bidders above a reserve, but on these type of horses, they're pre-selected, and you know, a lot of people up here to buy horses. So I thought it was kind of a perfect storm, and it was a really strong sale. It was a good group of horses. I really just looked at fillies, but they were a really good group, good sires. Feels like there was maybe a little more pedigree on the dam side at this sale than, you know, we think our pedigrees are in Japan and our pedigrees are in Europe, but there, I thought there was some real strength in the pedigrees of the sale. So, you know, we do have some really good sires here now, established sires, up and coming sires, and I think the breed is strong. We just have to make sure that racing is strong, and you know, we increase kind of our perception, our popularity, and you know, I think that's the part that really needs to work on. I think all these guys that make their living in the business, they're tremendous professional horsemen, but I think that sometimes the core product, which is the racing, I think is kind of an afterthought, and I just think we got to be very careful that the racing is really, you know, the tail doesn't wag too much, because it's really more about the racing. So I hope, you know, I hope the racing, you know, can improve, because if it does, you know, with the Middle Eastern money now and the dirt racing in Saudi and Dubai and the appetite from those, you know, buyers that are, you know, essentially new operations. They're not established Judmont, Shadwell, Darley, you know, that kind of add on if there's a pedigree they want. These guys are basically starting anew, and you know, I think all those things from the market perspective are really good. So I think all that together made for a strong sale.
From and you were with me, it's probably what, a month ago, and we had an extensive conversation. When you talk about that aspect, the racing side, it occurs to me, Craig, there is not necessarily as much of a, I don't want to call it a disconnect, but there you bring up a really an important point that, you know, there's these working parts of the industry, and I don't want to say disjointed. I don't want to give an impression that, you know, that we aren't, you know, that the infrastructure isn't entire. But it you say that, and it makes me think that, you know, the spread or the distance between the racing side and, let's say, the factories, the breeding side, they're at opposite ends, and that there isn't necessarily, you know, that kind of continuity. New York, actually, with NYRA's initiative and what their commitment to the New York bred program, you know, the purchase of the Hettinger property and so forth, they seem to have, I think, a tighter tie-in. And I suppose Keeneland, you know, naturally does. But beyond that, I think you bring up an interesting side of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is something that I've felt probably for a long time. I mean, there's not a real correlation between the health of the core product. Like if you I listen to your show, and I think, you know, you have a wide range of, you know, sort of core competencies of your regular guests. So you people do get a good perspective on bloodstock, on betting, on racing. When somebody wins a race, you know, you hear about that horse, but you hear their sort of origin story. It's a great show, you know, but I think, you know, this business, and I think the people that are kind of in powerful positions in the business are professional horse sellers, and I think they've really excelled at that, and there just aren't as many people that want to put a saddle on a horse and have a racehorse. And I think you know, that's something that, you know, will have to change for this to all, you know, keep going. I do, but I could be wrong. You know, horses are racing today because if they win a race, they're going to be worth something as a stallion, so that we can go sell more babies, instead of, my gosh, this is a great horse, and I've always wanted to win the Oaklawn Handicap. I've always wanted to win the Stephen Foster. I've always wanted to win, you know, there's no more Mass Handicap. I've always wanted to win, you know, the Whitney. It's like, no, if I hit that benchmark, now my horse is worth X, and it's, you know, it's that's fine, and I think that's a part of the business. It's really driven the top end, but, you know, like Casa Creed, you know, he ran till he was 8. He's a wonderful horse. Because he didn't have an opportunity at stud, you know, he wasn't rushed off, and there weren't many stallion farms sort of making Lee offer enough money to make him sell the horse, and he enjoyed it. And you know, that's one of the stories of the last few years, is kind of that type of horse. And you know, we need more of that. I mean, as much, like, not this time was an incredible horse, and he got hurt, and he deserves a chance at stud, and he was well-bred, and he's hit as a stallion. And I think that's great, and I have a share in him, and I'm happy he sold the sales topper last night, and he's got horses winning races at 5 and 6, and he only raced at 2, so it was obviously an injury that did it. But, like, we need to make sure, like, we're racing these horses, and they're... that's really what the business is about, at least to me.
Well, two reactions to that. And Jess, you know, feel free. Two things pop in mind when you talk about satisfaction and you know the pleasure that owners can derive and need to, you know, have as their motivation. I will not forget being at Churchill when Ouija Board won the second. I think it was at Churchill won the second time, and Lord Derby, who owned her, and was asked, you know, why, you know, have you continued to campaign, you know, when, you know, she's only going to have a certain number of foals. And he said, this is what I've wanted a horse like this my entire life. I there was no desire to rush her, you know, to become a brood mare. I wanted to, you know, win again. I've never had a feeling like this, you know, and here's a guy that, right? That,
yeah.
You remember?
And at
you
the
remember?
End of that, we're talking about Dornock, and they're already saying, "Oh, he's done enough. Next year, who would race him at 4 after he's done this?" You know.
You know, so, I mean, yeah. I understand. Yeah. I understand that too. I mean, it's obvious. You know, I've heard Satish when he used to be on your show. The only way you can actually make money in this business is if you have a stallion, and you know, I think Dornock, nobody would ever begrudge him breeding horses.
No.
He's a 9-furlong Remsen winner. He's obviously a Haskell winner, and he's obviously a Belmont winner at a mile and a quarter, which is a way more important from a commercial perspective. Belmont, even if it's not the mile and a half that we're all used to. I mean, from a commercial perspective, Belmont is a little bit of a death knell. But I think at a mile and a quarter at Saratoga, it was impressive. So he's going to stand. And anyone who's putting up big money for the horse is going to demand that he stands. So that's what happens. But I do think, you know, they've done a good job with that horse, and they'll race him a few more times. And he's a really gritty horse. And, you know, unfortunately, maybe he'll run on the Pegasus if he's still sound, or maybe, well, I don't know, I'm not involved. But, you know, that's the world we live in. But it, you know, I think our farm, we probably have gotten more enjoyment of winning, you know, listed races, grade 3 races with a filly that, you know, is from a pedigree we developed than somebody else would have. I think when you're in this high-end, top-end, all-or-nothing business, these horses have to be grade 1 winners, or we need to figure out the ones in the barn that might be and then get some new ones. And I think I love the Breeders' Cup, and I love the days with all the grade ones, but you know, I grew up at Arlington Park. Like, we used to have a champagne toast for whoever won the feature race on a Saturday, and Mr. Duchessois would bring everybody in, and you didn't always win, but you know it was a special thing to have. And I think like the wishing people luck, and I hope I win, but if I don't, I hope you win. I think there was a lot more of that, you know, when I was growing up. I think sometimes than there is today, but I just think from a racing perspective, we got to realize the most important thing about these horses is how fast they run, and the thoroughbred is supposed to be tested for, you know, all the attributes that make them special: speed and durability and soundness and grit and so on and so forth. And I think there's a lot of managing of reputations of horses rather than, you know, really saying, let's figure out how good this horse can be. And, you know, that's for me. But at the sales, you know, there's no end to the excitement for people, especially the sellers, that there's so many buyers here. You know, so it's been strong.
The other half of that campaigning conversation is a horse like Arthur's Ride. And that, you know, there's a horse, and these come along plenty. I mean, we get them on a regular basis, you know, that didn't get a chance to compete, you know, at their three-year-old goals, the logical three-year-old goals. And this was a horse that Mott had identified as a potential Derby horse originally. And, you know, all right, we gotta back off, and we'll make a career for him, you know, when he's ready to have a career.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a whole different trajectory. And these, you know, this is an important part of the handicap division. I mean,
that horse surprised me, to be honest. I lost money because I just, for me, it's easy to run through your conditions if you're a good horse as an older horse, because most of the good horses have gone through the conditions or they're already retired. And for a horse to basically make his stakes debut in what everyone thought was kind of a good enough Whitney, and do what he did, he must be some horse. And, you know, but, you know, in the three-year-olds never ran in my – I've only been watching horse racing kind of since the late 80s. But in my time, three-year-olds haven't really run in the Whitney. Because they have the Travers, but I think after Saratoga, they should be running against older horses, and you know those handicap races would get much bigger if there were less kind of grade ones for 3 year olds, because a lot of them would be forced to stay in training, and we'd have a lot better handicap division. But this horse, if he, you know, last year the gray horse that won the Florida Derby, that won the Breeders' Cup Classic, he did the same thing last year. Like White Abario. He was kind of, some people talked about him going into the Derby, and then he went away and he became the best horse. So, you know, I think this Arthur's Ride, he probably is, you know, the best horse right now, for at least for older horses.
Well, and being, you know, you look at his pedigree. I mean, he's. A stallion prospect
100%
immediately.
100%.
I mean, he was even before he got to this juncture. In the meantime, though, he's added to the, you know, he adds to the landscape and enhances, you know, what will be a lead up to, you know, to a Breeders' Cup.
Breeders' Cup, yeah.
I mean, and it's necessary, it's vital that horses like this emerge in the wake of, you know, when the top three-year-olds, that when they have to go, you know, when they have to go and stand. And I'll bring up a name, and I've used this example many times. Charlotte Weber said when went to Honor and Serve and Brilliant Speed went to Stud, and I asked, you know, because she loves to race, you know, I said, you know, why not go on with them? And she said, I can't justify spending what we spend if we don't occasionally have, you know, a plus in the ledger. She said, you can't face your accounting team every year and justify losing $8 million year after year after year. And I mean, if someone like Charlotte, you know, acknowledges,
yeah, I mean,
that.
I think, you know, we have both have farms in Florida, and she knew my grandpa, and she's very. I couldn't speak for her, but the sport is different today. I think, you know, as great as ADW wagering and TVG, now FanDuel and Fox and Twitter are, and the way we all communicate. Like, we used to go to the races, and that's how you saw people. That's how you learned things. That's how you, you know, and it's become really easy to watch a race on your phone, you know, while you're doing something else.
I
think for somebody like Charlotte, who's like the ultimate sports person, you know, owner, breeder, super high end pedigrees, you know,
old fashioned pedigrees.
You know, really, I think that those people kind of lose something when, you know, all the stakes are on one day. So there's one day with 40,000 people, and you know, and there's 10 of those a year, and every other day is, you know, if you're not taking care of the horse itself, it's just as easy to stay on your couch. And I think we've lost a lot of people because of that. And you know, that, to be honest, has created a lot of new owners too, because for the reasons the modern conveniences can allow them to, you know, to live their lives and have horses too. So there have been people fill the role of kind of the old school owner breeder that would probably come up here for the summer and stuff. Like, I think long term, like the somebody like that, they have to sell. Like, if I got, my mom would give me a tap on the shoulder if I had to honor and serve. I mean, and she'd say, Craig, you know, at some point. So, you know, and there'd be nothing I could say. And I think the fact that that horse was a poor stallion doesn't really matter. He was going to be the best horse the next year too, because he hadn't been raced that much, and because of his connections and because of his pedigree. And you know, when that horse was right, like, she would have enjoyed that horse for another year. I mean, he retired completely sound. You know, and now he might be in Turkey, or I don't know. He's gone. So, you know, that's the cycle with these stallions. I mean, once they have soldiers on the ground, it's whether they can run. It does not matter what they stood for or whose idea. It's like the race, it's a good thing. The racetrack is still the ultimate decider of who of
exactly
of the breed. But yeah, I'm a fan too, and I bet horses, and obviously I'm invested and immersed in the business. But you know, you miss having, like, I'd like to see these horses race at four, but it's a chicken or egg thing. If they're so well bred, and they were such an expensive yearling, and they won their grade one, you know, they can turn into eight rings too, where they race for 3 years after they've won their grade one, and they end up in California. So, you know, there's a real risk with racehorses. But what we can do, and this is controversial, but what we can do is we can say the first grade one for 3 year olds is at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, you're not the only one that says this.
And we were. Those graded stakes committee meetings are confidential, but we were within one vote of having that happen at one point, and it didn't quite get there. But I think the outcome from a role like that, yes, it would have made it more difficult to sell baby stallion prospects. But if your goal is to really drive the core product, these horses are going to have to run in tougher races to get their grade one at two turns on the dirt. And then those horses, it's going to be, you know, the form is really going to sort itself out, and we're going to recognize who the best ones were, and those horses are going to get rewarded, and the connections of those horses are going to get rewarded in monetary ways, in a much bigger way. But that's one thing we can do, and then your handicap division the next year would be awesome. And we used to have the Santa Anita handicap. You'd have a four-year-old Malibu, the Stroob was the third, San
right.
Fernando or something was the second. The winner of the Stroob would meet the winner of the five-year-olds in the San Anita handicap. And now, you know, those were the horses that they talk about, you know, that
no doubt
were a different breed. than what we're seeing now, because they were tested, and when they were two, we knew they were going to be three next year and four the next year, and they were campaigned as such. But I think trying to get it all now, so that we can get this grade one and monetized, that's just the way we're campaigning horses. Is different than maybe could be better for the breed, but
and obviously for the fans too. It
goes without saying for the fans, but I don't think any fan would argue with that.
Yeah.
Craig Burnick joining us, Jessica Martini here as we join you from an increasingly brightening sky at the sales grounds of the Humphrey Finney Pavilion, Fasig Tipton. A huge day or night last night. And, the social scene, of course, big part of it as well. Are you, Craig, tonight you got an interest?
Yeah, there's obviously really good horses, but I think we're going to be going through the process and probably not coming home based on the sometimes you see people after they've bought a horse and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe what I just spent. And it's like last night, they're like, I can't wait for tomorrow. So
I
don't think anybody's left. So,
no.
As much as I'd like to, when you go home, they're just another horse, and you've got to, there's got to be reasons for them. So there are some really good horses tonight, obviously, and if they were to bring what we think they're worth, maybe, but if they bring what somebody else thinks they're worth more than we do, they're going to be the lucky buyers. So I don't think I'm here, but I'm. The consigners aren't jumping out of their chair when I come up to the. I'm not getting the same love as sometimes. sometimes you do around these places.
That's tremendous. And the thing is, I've broadcast from Keeneland now the last several years, and you realize that, this is a show place, and it. It's kind of I don't want to call it a made-for-TV event, but it right?
It does have
that kind of,
a reality TV
like Love
show
Island?
Fox.
Right? That actually would be very funny.
Yes.
We could put Mike Rapoli and Jon Stewart and a few of these other, Horse Island.
Horse Island.
Horse Island Survivor.
I mean,
Vinny Viola's got to be in there somewhere.
I don't know if Vinny would sign up for that.
A person shouldn't have one glass of wine and then tweet. But one time I said, you know what would be fun is if the fans could vote on partnerships and horses.
Oh, and that would be awesome.
I said, Michael Averone and Sturt Janney should own a horse together.
That is fabulous.
I think what makes the business horse racing individual sport, right? So what we try to do with our horses and what somebody else tries to do with their horses might have different programs, different goals, different ways about doing it, different reasons we're in the business, and I think all that's great. But it's wild that people that should kind of like each other because they share a passion for something that has been called the ultimate triviality, the disdain for people, it's
funny.
It's wild.
Sometimes we go up and interview people. It's a new partnership that's come together, and you can tell right away, like when you're interviewing, like, oh, this is not going to go well.
The only good thing about a partnership is that it costs less to get in. But
right.
That's not the only good thing. But when three or four different partnerships get in on the same horse, chances are it's not going to work. But you know, I'm really close with Jack Wolf, and you know, his core group of investors have been with him 15, 20 years, and,
yeah.
And they've made a huge part of their lives around the racing and the sales and the traveling and the, and I mean I think it's great, but it, you're right, like once in a while you see two people whose bloodstock agents play golf together, realize they're both on the same horse, and they team up to try to outbid somebody else, and there's no way they're going to get along. Like there's just they're just splitting the cost, but now you have
it's like when you know your friend is marrying the wrong person, but you can't say anything.
Well, when you tell your friend they're marrying the wrong person, all you do is you give those two people something in common, something to fight for, because at least they're going to hate you.
You're doing a good deed. Okay.
So we've all done that and won't again. Anyway.
Too funny.
I appreciate being on.
Always
great. Enjoy it, and love what you guys do, and you know, TDN and the Steve Bick Show. They're. I read every day, so nice to have it.
Thank you.
Craig Burnick, everybody. Going to have to take a break because we're a little past the halfway point. Let me get a picture of the two of you for the listings. There we go. And Jess Martini is still with us, of course. Beautiful. Nice.
Thanks.
John Sheriffs and Dottie and Gordo are going to pop on, I think. Michael Dickinson went by. I wouldn't mind getting Michael in as well. And no, you.
Oh,
you,
I'm still
you,
here.
You
okay,
can stay. You, Ned Toffee. I mean, I the stars.
So better people
all,
than me.
All the stars are out. It's too cloudy for stars. I did the other night. I got up at 4 a.m. to go see one of those light shows. Right, the Northern Lights were.
You're one of those people, huh?
And it was too cloudy. It was. Grab a mic for a minute, Ned. I'm not going to let you walk away because you're going to go off into the. I know what's going to happen.
No, we don't tell the truth on this show.
You better be careful, please. Don't do that. Ned Toffee, everybody, from Spendthrift. And Ned, it seems like everybody's expectations were exceeded yesterday, last night.
Yeah, I thought it was exciting. It was a really strong group. I think, first of all, Fasig did a great job putting together a really good catalog. This were a lot of really nice individuals, plenty of really good pedigrees, and if they didn't have the big pedigree, then they tended to be exceptional individuals. So, you know, they did a great job of bringing the horses here and then bringing a lot of the right people here. So, you know, all the consigners that I spoke to said they had great traffic, great activity on most of their horses. So I think it was a good night for everybody.
You know, Spendthrift, unique because you participate in all aspects. You're watching the ledger to see how your stallions are doing, but you're also buying. You're also an active. We were just talking about, Craig was just talking about partnerships, and you partner up readily.
Yep. You know, I think one of the things you've got to take a few shots. You know, this is not a game where you can. Very often you can just come in and buy one or two horses and have success. You need to have a few bullets to fire, and it's an expensive game too. So we try to make our dollar stretch as far as it can. So we do a lot of partnering, try to get ourselves involved with as many good colts as we can. You know, our aim is a little different than some of the people here, in that, you know, everything, the colts, the goal is to get them into our stallion barn. And if we can do that, that's great. It sure beats having to pay, you know, stallion market, stallion prospect market prices. in force. Thank you. And he immediately threw that mare into the sale in November, and sold the weanling. So the Mattoli he sold as a weanling for $300,000, and it might be, it's one of the prettiest physicals here on the sale.
Hip 206. Yeah. Here's a story for Jess.
I'm filing that away. No, it's a great story, and it keeps getting better.
So RJ cashed in. We all had we were all taking bets on whether RJ was going to show up for work the next day, but he did, and he is. He is still working for us and does a great job.
I'd love that. Is he in town or
he's in town now? He's got to
be at the farm.
He's back working.
I get it. I understand. Who else? What else? From your roster?
There's a number of nice Into Mischiefs. The horse that's one of the horses that's really exciting. Is a first crop yearlings is Yaupon, and his, you know, they really stood out as weanlings.
Yeah, the weanlings
last November, and then he's got a number of very, very nice individuals that are up here too. So the Ponses, who are our old partners on Malibu Moon. Bred one and have brought it up here to Seoul. They have it with bluegrass thoroughbreds. And that's a very, very nice individual.
200,000 last night. The colt, 82.
Yeah. So there's a number of very, very nice ones here, he certainly bodes well for his future.
Well, and you had a $500,000 seller to AMO Racing. I was talking about international interests earlier with Boyd, and there's obviously that was a Gainsway consign. Lady Sibylla, I remember that mare.
Yeah.
I think they've started racing in the U.S. too, AMO Racing.
Yes. There's four Yaupons that'll go through the ring tonight, two colts, two fillies.
Yeah, really, really nice group that has been brought up here. So it's not totally surprising because we sure saw those kind of individuals in November.
Really nice. And
yeah,
I see
looking at Randy Hartley over there. They bought a bunch of those Yaupons.
They did.
They
invested very heavily in Yaupon, and they do a wonderful job.
And they'll hang on to those. And
no, I think they're selling them.
They are selling one. They have one with Gainsway that's extremely nice.
That was that was the AMO for $500,000.
Yeah, and I imagine that we may see some of those in the 2-year-old sales as well.
Just looking to see on the Pinhook guide. The cheat sheet from TDN, which is always valuable to see. Here's a Yaupon. Oh, Belle Gallatiny tonight, too. The one that loves equine is selling as a pinhook, a weanling pinhook.
Yep. No, that's I think Yaupon, maybe if any stallion that I can think of that we've had, stamps his offspring as consistently as anyone I can think of. They are so cookie cutter in terms of their shape, in terms of their look, and they're almost always a dark bay, almost black. They have tremendous bone, and they just have that really, really athletic profile on them, and they tend to be very, very correct as well. So he's doing a great job, and generally breeders love to see a horse that's stamping his offspring, and he is doing that as much as any horse I can think of.
There's also a Yaupon tonight that Meg Levy is selling. DKW Racing bought $110,000 Yaupon colt. It's going to go through early tonight, 166.
Yep. You know, just for a first crop sire to have that many
is
here,
notable.
There's only about 240 cataloged. And again, Fasig's inspection team does such a good job of getting really good individuals here. So for a first crop sire to have that many in here is really a credit to the horse.
Ned Toffee joining us from Spendthrift. And Ned, we're now, going back to June. Can we get you guys in about 10 minutes? All right, then come back around. Dottie and Gordo and John Sheriffs.
I've got to remember that line. I'm going to make a – I'll be right back, Steve.
Make a swing. it's been the babies have all dropped. Some of the first foals, What has impressed you so far?
We've got a bunch. Jackie's Warrior.
Nice.
Has a really, really impressive group. We actually bred Beholder to Jackie's Warrior last year.
Oh, really?
And that foal is probably the nicest individual that she's thrown yet.
Unbelievable.
Really just a standout. Macmer Hall that supported him very heavily told me they've got four that are the nicest individuals they've got on the farm. We've got several that we really like. Cyberknife is a horse who has really come on. He's first crop foals on the farm. They looked the part. We were very happy with them early on as newborns, and now they just continue to get better and better. And so now that they're 3, 4, 5 months of age, they're just really, really strong and getting just a really classy, scopy look to them. So, you know, it's, again, we're always looking forward to the next one, and you never know where they're coming from. So.
Zandon
bred his first crop.
That's it. Okay, we'll see them.
So we don't know how those foals look yet.
Not yet.
How do they look? How do they look on
they're good looking
on the ultrasound?
How they look good?
A little small. Yeah. On the small side.
Oh, my God, that was good.
Yeah. The first pregnancy check that you do. That's usually about a 14 millimeter in diameter.
And you can't tell, Ned. You can't tell from that.
Not yet.
It's what a kind perfectly of horseman round, are you?
Well, exactly. I mean, and the roster, I mean, is it's such an extensive roster, too. I mean, when you go through the Spendthrift, one that we didn't talk about actually was Omaha Beach, who's getting steady results.
Just doing really, really well.
Right?
Yeah, and I think people really believe it. It's such a wonderful pedigree. He's such a classy animal himself, and he's getting a lot of horses at the right tracks. He kind of doesn't quite have the major horse yet, but he's got a lot of really good ones out there, and he's been steady, and I think people still believe he's going to continue to do more, and I think they're too classy looking not to do more, so we feel really good about where he is right now.
The Vino Rossos too, I think.
Yeah really strong, really solid. He could stand a big runner, but he's, again, they look the part. He's a horse who's getting it done
well, and you know, it's funny, we had this conversation with Craig Burnick about waiting for horses to mature. A Vino Rosso, why would anybody expect that they'd be that early or be that successful up to six furlongs and whatever, win early when his best work came late in his 4-year-old year?
We were, and I'll brag a little bit here, but we, last year our freshman sire crop, we had the Mitoli was the leading freshman sire. And I'll probably get the order wrong after that, but we had the top four. So it was Mitoli, Maximus Mischief, Omaha Beach, and Vino Rosso were the four leading freshman sire. And to bring all of them in to stud in one crop, we'll be lucky if we could ever pull that off again. But Tammy and Eric Gustafson that own the farm now, I've just done such a great job, and they're so committed to trying to carry on the legacy that Wayne built, and they're doing a wonderful job with it, and they're up here enjoying Saratoga, and we're trying to jump back in and swing and get a few more.
Ned Toffee, on the racetrack, what's cooking out there? You excited about for the second half of the year?
Well, we got King's Barns actually runs in the Jockey Club here on September 1. We actually have a horse named Major Dude who is going to run in the Four Star Dave. I love to be able to. We won that a couple of years ago. I'm drawing a blank on the Got Stormy with Got Stormy. And then I would love to be able to win that again. For I started my first jobs in the horse business, it was a very long time ago now, was about 45 minutes from here in the town of Old Chatham, New York.
Sure.
And I knew very well and followed four-star Dave's career and you know, heard stories about him as a young horse and what a tough guy he was. But he was such a neat horse. So it's always fun to be able to win a race like that. So we'll have our work cut out for us in there. But going to take a shot with Major Dude, and that's a nice little bonus because he's by Bolt Doro, one of our sires. But we bought Major Dude up here several years ago. He's a very nice yearling, and he's been a really good hard-knocking racehorse for us. So.
Well, best of luck as always, and it's always a pleasure, an opportunity to grab you and catch up with you and everything at Spendthrift. And, of course, you know, a tremendous legacy going back to Leslie Combs and through and obviously, you know, what has been just a venerable institution in the game.
Thank you very much. It is. It's a wonderful place, and there's so much history there, It's great to be working there for the people that I'm working for and for all of us to be trying to carry on that tradition. So a lot to live up to. We're giving it our best.
You're doing a good job.
Ned Toffee, everybody. Let's take a break. We got to get one in, and we'll come back for the third hour. And Michael Dickinson was close by. I want to talk to Michael about the synthetic surface topic a little bit and what it portends for stallions and for you know what the future is. We've got Jessica Martini sitting in as a co-host. You want to leave?
Oh, gosh, wow.